It's different in every culture. It has changed over the years, but it has always required youth. There must be at least five. The whore, she's corrupted. She dies first. The athlete. The scholar. The fool. All suffer and die at the hands of whatever horror they have raised, leaving the last to live or die as fate decides. The virgin.
Me?
Virgin? We work with what we have.
Female main characters in horror throughout history, particularly films, tend to fit in a few distinct categories. The damsel in distress, the scream queen, and the final girl. To me, it's the final girl that opens up an enormous amount of dialogue about what purpose women serve in horror. Studying the final girl simultaneously exposes both the misogyny and the empowerment that horror films have given women over the years. Final girls reveal how we revel in both the violence against and the saving of women. And looking at how the final girl has changed and evolved through time shines a direct light on how women have changed and evolved in society. So, what do final girls tell us about women in horror? First, what is a final girl? Chances are you know, even if you can't define every single characteristic. The term was first used by Carol J. Clover in the 1992 book Men, Women, and Chainsaws, Gender in the Modern Horror Film. The final girl is described as the female protagonist in a horror movie who watches her friends die, observes and learns things about the monster or killer, and then manages to survive until the end of the movie. She usually defeats the monster or villain. She's usually the good girl, a virgin, not rebellious, doesn't drink or do drugs, but is the clear-headed, bookish, or girl-next-door type. Pretty, but not sexy. She's usually who we see the horror through. Our eyes, our audience surrogate. We watch the events unfold and mar her, change her, from being pure and untouched to blood-soaked and traumatized. And then she wins. Through hard work or force or luck, she lives to be the final girl alive when the credits roll. In many ways, the traditional final girl figure reflects and reinforces the classic idea that women's worth is dictated by how well they can follow men's rules. If she can be the ideal role model for the impressionable female viewer, she's allowed to live. If she's too headstrong, too sexy, too strong-willed, too wild, she dies. Oftentimes, the final girl is interesting and compelling to us because she's kind of not supposed to win. Looking at the stereotypical way women are viewed in many societies around the world, she's weaker, a better foil for the villain because she's not supposed to be able to survive. And when she does, it's all the sweeter. If the same character in the same situation were a man, we'd probably have different expectations about his survival. From the classic final girls to the more modern subversive ones, the fact that they are a woman and how we feel about that correlates strongly to how successful and iconic that character and film becomes. Now, there's a whole checklist of characteristics that define a final girl, but not all final girls check every single box. We can look as far back as the silent film era to see examples of final girls. Some argue that the 1920s film, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, features the earliest example of the final girl trope. Jane's femininity and beauty save her from being killed, and she survives until the end. Funny how we still prioritize that a final girl is pretty and feminine, even now. The next more apparent final girl is Ellen in Nosferatu in 1922. She's clever and quick, and actually uses her virginity to her advantage to take down the monster. But, spoiler alert, she does end up dying, if not heroically and selflessly. These examples are interesting because since the beginning of film and up until the mid-20th century, women in horror were almost always victims, ending up dead by the end. Damsels in distress that are rescued by the male protagonist, or they're simply killed to further the female protagonist's storyline. But the final girl creates her own archetype, a woman that most modern women would want to be like. Slasher films of the 1970s brought the final girl to more renowned popularity. You got Marilyn Burns in The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Trish in Friday the 13th, and Nancy Thompson in The Nightmare on Elm Street. 1974's Black Christmas features a proto-final girl that avoids a lot of the misogyny and actually gives her way more power. The final girl trope is so powerful. We can see it in films that are not traditionally considered horror, but have the vibe and spirit of that 1970s slasher. While I personally count Alien as a horror film, I mean, it's a classic slasher just with an alien instead of a sick weirdo, Ellen Ripley is a great example of a sci-fi action final girl. Sarah Connor is Terminator's final girl. And what I love about these heroes are that as the sequels progress, they grow from running, screaming victims into gun-toting hunters and warriors who decide to take on the monster rather than run from it. And speaking of, we cannot forget perhaps the most famous final girl of all, Laurie Strode in Halloween, who checks pretty much every final girl box there is. She's the only girl in the movie not preoccupied with sex. She's investigative and smart. She runs around crying and screaming, but still fights back against Michael Myers and is the last one to survive. And in the sequels, she continues to fight. Film after film after film. When looking at more classic final girls, I can see incredible correlations to what was going on in our society at the time. Horror is the diamond by which we typically examine the facets of our own values and fears. And what we do to and make of the final girls tends to align with how we treat and think about women. In the 1970s, the homemaker of the beginning of the century is butting up against the more independent, bra-burning woman. And so the final girl becomes more and more independent. As women's liberation comes into play, the way women are portrayed in film changes and morphs to match. Perhaps the final girl plays into our desire to protect that which we view to be delicate and innocent. I mean, women and children first, right? When watching a horror movie, we see a woman, usually young and inexperienced, in danger. And we automatically root for her. It's almost biological. We want her to be okay, partially because she's a woman. The pattern of the final girl is violent, traumatic, and scary, but always ends in triumph. It's super cathartic when you think about all the women society tries to make into victims, but who come out on top in the end. We eat up stories about sexual assault or kidnap or abuse survivors who undergo unthinkable things only to come out the other end able to tell their story. We find them empowering and inspiring, and we should. But the thing is, lots of women don't come out of those situations okay. By heralding the final girl, we disregard the women who don't make it. Even though representation like the final girl can give women that incredible feeling of survival being possible despite incredible odds, it also reminds us that there are some women we can accept throwing away. This trope can imply that other women, the sexually promiscuous or less intelligent ones, didn't earn the right to survive until the end. Not only that, we pat the final girl on the back for surviving, but then what? We like to celebrate these abuse survivors, but do we celebrate them going back to everyday life and trying to live with what happened to them? We celebrate that they survive, but not that they then have to live. When a movie like Halloween or Texas Chainsaw Massacre does well, there's a sequel. And so instead of healing and rebuilding, the final girl has to fight and claw to survival all over again. I do not think that the final girl in and of herself is inherently wrong, but she can shine a light on things that are wrong, as well as things that are right. Modern final girls tend to intentionally critique the trope, attempt to point out where it fails, and make adjustments to show the beautiful diversity of women, the strong and the weak, the masculine and the feminine, and beyond. One of the first quote-unquote modern final girls is Sydney Prescott in the multiple Scream movies. With each film, she gets smarter and more dangerous. Wes Craven created her intentionally to challenge some of the final girls he helped create. While she checks a lot of boxes, she's also not so demure and sweet as we may think, and she even has sex in the first movie. She takes control over what happens to her because she knows the rules and decides to break them. She represents the woman approaching the 21st century. The don't need no man but could want a man if she felt like it, won't take abuse sitting down, scrappy, badass. One of my favorite examples of a final girl turned on her head is the extremely meta The Cabin in the Woods from 2011. It's an incredible movie and follows in Scream's footsteps by parodying many horror tropes. But it does so in such an incredible way. I won't spoil anything here, but if you've seen the film, you know exactly what I mean. And if you're interested in horror tropes like The Final Girl, I highly recommend you see it. It didn't get more meta than The Final Girl and Final Girls, both films released in 2015. Each one explores and subverts the trope in their own ways. Scream set the scene for films like these to be self-aware enough to not only accept the trope, but play with it, giving female filmmakers and actresses space to explore how The Final Girl affects them and what they want her to be. 2020's Freaky provides a unique examination of the trope by having the psycho killer and the final girl actually switch bodies. In the past few years, we've seen some final girls who are less on the nose as the ones just mentioned. You can see the spirit of the final girl in Jay in It Follows, and Thomasine in The Witch. While the classic final girl is punished for their sexuality, these girls don't run from it. They embrace it, and they use it in order to survive. Some 21st century final girls don't necessarily defeat the monster in the end at all. In The Descent, the main character goes insane from her experiences, surviving until the end, sure, but at a cost. And Midsommar ends with the main character succumbing to joining the cult that killed her friends, becoming a killer herself, a part of the monster, instead of escaping it. In You're Next, the main female character becomes the monster in order to survive, adapting and adopting violence to become even more dangerous than the threat that faced her. Instead of triumph and empowerment, these characters get illusions, lies, and more violence. Sometimes they get triumph and empowerment alongside those illusions, lies, and violence, which just tells me that we're finally telling stories worthy of the complexities and contradictions that come with being a woman. Horror is built on formulas. It makes getting scared fun because to some degree we know what's coming next. And when filmmakers break formula in clever ways, it's like a sudden drop on a roller coaster. This is what makes new commentaries and approaches to The Final Girl so fun. My personal favorite example of the modern Final Girl is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Buffy very intentionally subverts our expectations as she constantly walks the line between the rebellious, sexually free girl who should be the one to die and the clever, brave Final Girl who comes out on top. Creator Joss Whedon said he came up for the idea for Buffy when he considered what would happen if the sexy blonde cheerleader in the alley turned around and killed the monster instead of screaming and running away. Buffy is the final girl by prophecy, the one who is supposed to stand alone and fight and survive. But she doesn't just defend herself. She seeks out the monsters on a daily basis to destroy them, sometimes sacrificing her life as a normal teenage girl to do so, giving up the concept of a steady boyfriend or exploring herself so that she can be the final girl. I think Buffy has resonated with so many people because she represents both types of women, final girl and otherwise. But she gets to survive and fight and still have friends by her side. By the end of the show, she declares a change to the rules. Why just one slayer, one girl? Why can't all girls be slayers? Why do we have to claw to survival alone when we can defeat the monsters together? She actively changes the final girl trope in subtle and well-thought-out ways. PhD student Morgan Pedraza delved deep into the idea of the final girl in 2019. In her paper, she says, quote, "Representations of violence against any women and any sort of minority group, seeing that repeatedly, creates an expectation about what it means to be part of those groups." Tracing the final girl's changes, we see a shift from victim to empowered hero. In modern times, the final girl is less of a symbol of the male version of the ideal woman, so pure of sexual experience, so smart, so strong, so resourceful, almost to the point of masculinity, and more their own people who can embrace being feminine and being strong at the same time. The final girl tells us that being feminine no longer equates to being weak. And while violence against women isn't magically going away anytime soon, we are experiencing an unprecedented period of liberation, of women being allowed to take control of their lives and their futures. We see, through clinging to but altering the final girl, that the persistent and institutional problem of violence against women is both stagnating and evolving. Just like the complex stories they help us tell, the final girl both is and is not a feminist concept. It depends on how and when you look at her. We've talked about the empowering side of things, but if they follow the trope, good virgin lives, bad sexy girl dies, the feminism is not intersectional, and therefore, to me, is not feminism. And speaking of intersectionality, the final girl, almost always, is white. This points to a larger issue of POC women in horror, a challenge I've experienced coming up with topics for this very show. Historically, white women have achieved levels of equality that Black, Latina, Asian, and Indigenous women still have to wait for. Women of color tend to receive rights and privileges after white women do, or else not at all. Women of color tend to experience violence of all types more frequently than white women do. And the final girl trope both does and does not reflect that. We don't see POC final girls suffer the same violence as the white ones. That representation just is not there, which is incongruent with how the world is. And at the same time, we don't see representation of POC women conquering and escaping either. Purity, as a literary concept, is often associated with the color white or light-colored things. Alfred Hitchcock was quoted as saying that blondes make the best victims, that they're like virgin snow that shows up the bloody footprints. Society still has more empathy for white women than it does for women of color, and we see that in the final girl trope. It tells us white women come first, they are worth being protected, they are worth being celebrated, and it's really uncomfortable to acknowledge that. After all, the Black guy dying first is a horror trope all its own. Not to say there are no Black final girls. Adelaide from Jordan Peele's Us is a fantastic example of a complex and socially significant Black final girl. However, Us is a social horror film. Part of its goal is to make commentary about race and social structure. We don't really have a mainstream POC equivalent to Laurie Strode. However, Us is a start, and a really good one. 2018's Assassination Nation features a group of final girls, including a Black girl and a transgender girl. These are small steps in the best possible direction. Films like these give me hope for more diverse final girls in the future. We talked a little bit earlier about how we tend to care more about the final girl's trauma than her recovery. This mirrors the disinterest we tend to have in women's lives after the violence they've experienced. Sometimes it's not even disinterest, but active disregard and gaslighting, telling them to their face that what they experienced wasn't so bad or didn't happen at all. In America, 1 in 3 women have experienced violence, but only 40% talk about it, and fewer still seek professional help. There is a fear of not being believed, that no one will care. The final girl trope struggles with this, but recent content has sought to address it. The 2015 video game Final Girl has you play as some of the classic and popular final girls in therapy. And much of the game addresses the normal lives of those women after their movies are over, giving them a chance to be normal and to heal. The 2022 Halloween film, which brings Laurie Strode back to the big screen over 40 years later, does a really good job of breaking down the difficulties of post-violence life. And it was intentional. The film was being produced on the heels of the 2017 Me Too movement, a social movement and awareness campaign against sexual abuse, harassment, and rape culture. In the film, Laurie is told to let go of what happened to her decades ago, but she needs to confront and be vocal about the violence that was enacted on her, that changed her. Laurie Strode's actress, Jamie Lee Curtis, has stated that it wasn't set out to be written that way, but it naturally reflected the zeitgeist and public consciousness, which is what horror movies have always done. I am really looking forward to what The Final Girl still has to teach us about the relationship between women, horror, and society. We define these women through their victimhood and the violence they experience, but we can do so much more. Hysteria is hosted and created by me, Allie Nimmons. Find more episodes on your podcast player or at hysteriapod.com.